Good morning and welcome into Big Talk, College Sports with a Midwest Perspective, Blue Collar and Blue Blood. I'm Dalton Shetler alongside my partner, Sam Sprunger. Sam, I'm back. I got a week. Do I look like I got a new glow about me?
You look a little relaxed, you know, because going to Minneapolis is the place to hang out and just get relaxation in, right?
Where you just snort basketball for 24 hours straight.
That's right. For what, 4 straight days, and you know, just boom. And
yeah,
that to me is relaxing. So I don't. Yeah, sure.
Fair. but no, it's a great time of the year where we're getting ready for the big dance on both.
It's like Christmas Eve. This weekend's like Christmas Eve.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Well, and I was explaining to somebody that this week I enjoy almost as much as the first week of the tournament. Not as much, but almost.
Yeah.
And it's because all the mid-major games. Watching mid-major tournaments is awesome. All the buzzer beaters, the wacky stuff that happens this week, I think totally flies under the radar.
Well, my question is I've seen a lot of people be upset with the way those mid-major tournaments are set up. They think it should be set up like it's not the Mountain West that the
You're talking about the West Coast where it's
West Coast, WCC, yeah. Where the top two seeds go to the semifinals automatically and everybody works their way through, because there's no reward for doing well in the beginning, or you know, in the regular season for those good teams, because there are a lot of, like you said, those buzzer beaters that come through that, you know, when you play in a conference, it doesn't matter if you're horrible, you know, those teams, cause you've seen them at least twice, you know? So I get it. I get it at the same time because of, you know, you want to set it up as a tournament, but yeah, I kind of agree that maybe the WCC's got to figure it out.
No, I kind of do too. And it's so funny because I remember the first time I stumbled across the WCC and I saw the bracket. I was like, what kind of Sudoku puzzle is this of a bracket? And then you kind of analyze it more and you think about it and you're like, that actually makes a ton of sense.
Well, yeah, it's the reward. You still got to win two games. Right. Those two teams still have to win two games to win the tournament, but it's a reward for doing well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let the teams that struggled or didn't do as well have to fight their way through it. And they do it in a tiered way to where like the next three teams are they do it to where there's buys, you know, and the top two teams buy into the semis. Like, yep. I think it's a great setup. I think it would do conferences a lot better. Those small conferences.
Yeah,
It's the one bid conferences that should have their better teams towards the end to where maybe they don't have to play 4 days in a row. You know,
nope.
Are you winking at me or your contact screen?
My contact is really bugging out. I am fighting over here in my own battle.
That's okay.
But let's move to the Big Ten tournament on the men's side, because we're right in the middle of all of it. Sam's got the Purdue jersey or hoodie going for today. He's ready to go. Let's go ahead and recap what we've seen so far from Minneapolis before we talk about what is today as Sam and the Boilermakers get ready to start their trek. Yesterday, Michigan State beats Minnesota in what was a pretty highly efficient game from both sides, I thought, Sam.
Yeah, it was. Up until when Michigan State, you know, kind of stretched their legs and got it to 8 and 9 points where they just kind of held it there, the biggest lead was kind of, for the most part, 4 or 5 points, and it was back and forth, both teams. You know, one team would get up five, you know, Minnesota would get up five, then a three-pointer and a three-point play put Michigan State on top. Like, it was so back and forth. These two teams, it was fitting that they were 8 and 9 because they were probably the closest to you know, of these games, the closest two, I guess Penn State and IU, but I think maybe that was, we'll talk about that one too,
yeah.
I'm sure. But these two came into the tournament paired against each other, and they played probably, to me, the more entertaining games, because it wasn't a dumpster fire from one team. They both played pretty well.
Yeah, they most certainly did. And we've talked about this a little bit before, Sam, but I think we understand what Michigan State is at this point, and it's inconsistent, it's up and down, and there have been questions about what do they do at the center spot because they're not getting a ton of production at the five. They're starting to tweak those lineups around where you're seeing instead of the Twin Towers lineup, because a couple of times we saw Sissoko and Cooper on the floor together in the regular season, and it just was like, look, it's nothing against those guys, but together on the floor at the same time, it makes things a little bit tougher. And we saw in that game against Minnesota, Malik Hall played the four, Cooper started at the five, and then when they made substitutions, Booker came in at the four, and you would bring Sissoko in for a five at the minute, Cooper at the five, Kohler at the five, and you could kind of work it around that way, where Booker is at the four with this team, it makes the most sense, and it helps a little bit. So that's the tweak that's going to happen there. So now you kind of understand what this team is for the future. We saw Michigan State at its best yesterday because they got out in transition. When they run, they're really, really good. The problem's in the half courts. And in the half court, we also saw Walker hit some shots. We saw Hogard have a big second half. Hogard in the second half went 5 of 5 from the floor. I don't believe he had a turnover in the second half. I mean, it was a tale of two halves for A.J. Hogard. But if you get that Hogard from the second half, you get Walker, who, I mean, at his best is averaging 20-some points a game, and you get Jaden Akins hitting some shots. Like, that's how this team will win. And that's how they can win moving into the NCAA tournament. How far that sends them, I'm not sure. But, you know, guards get hot in March, and you saw Purdue make an Elite Eight on the back of Carson Edwards just chucking in that 2019 tournament.
Yeah, from the logo.
UConn won a national title with Shabazz Napier in 2014 just because the guard got hot. Like, there is something to backcourt getting hot. And if Michigan State is going to reach its ceiling, which is probably – second weekend of maybe an Elite Eight or something at its very high ceiling, it's those guards getting hot.
I think that's an overachievement if they make that Elite Eight. If they get to the point where they can play for a Final Four, I think that's a great overachievement, having seen what we've seen from this team this year.
No argument. I'm just putting that as like the max ceiling.
And at one point, Walker wasn't in there. It was Akin, Hogart, and the third
Holloman.
Guard.
Holloman had a great game.
Yeah, Holloman. All three of them, at one point, they were 11 of 11 for the game.
Yeah.
And that is what helped Michigan State stay in that game. It wasn't Walker doing anything great. It wasn't Hall. Heck, Hall had his third foul within 30 seconds of the start of the second half, and he was on the bench for a little while. Now, Izzo didn't keep him there as long as he did in the first half because you don't want somebody having three fouls in the first half.
Yep.
But like it was that guard play. And like you said, if they could get one, two of them really firing, you could see them making it maybe to that second weekend, depending on their draw.
And I think, though, like, I guess my larger point is, like, that's the formula. Like, there's nothing else. It's nothing super complex or complicated. It's just, if these guards can hit some mid-range tough shots, Michigan State's going to go a little bit far. If they can't, they might be leaving a little bit earlier, like they lost to Minnesota this year, Iowa this year, Ohio State this year, so on and so forth. So
hats off to Michigan or to Minnesota too for what they for bowing out in their first game. First off, they had a bye, which to us is like, you know, winning the title compared to what they were supposed to be having a bye in the tournament. But the fact that they won 18 games and they're gonna play in postseason, it's gonna be the NIT, but that's fine. Seeing that they were supposed to be the worst team in the conference, and Ben Johnson did one heck of a job with the players that he's got, and he got his players gave him everything they could this season. So that to them, an NIT berth, while you're not extremely happy about, you should be ecstatic with as a Gopher fan.
Oh, again, heading into the year, we talked about they were 13th or 14th in the Big Ten where they were supposed to be, and. Yeah, I don't know how you couldn't be impressed with what Ben Johnson and the Gophers achieved this year. I thought that was really one of the more incredible jobs the conference had.
Sure.
But speaking of red-hot shooting guards, Wisconsin, what was that?
The no Badgers kidding.
Thumped the Terrapins 87-56. I looked down because I had the stats going at the same time while watching the games yesterday. And at one point, Wisconsin was 12 of 15 from three. Like, that was
absurd.
Insane.
That's 80%.
Yeah.
or yeah, 80%. Yeah, I had to think about it. Yeah.
That's I sat there and I like kept watching the game and kept seeing those numbers rise. I was like, look, Maryland, even though you aren't playing your best game or whatever, it doesn't matter. Just pack it up, head back to College Park. Like, if Wisconsin decides to shoot like that, which who can ever shoot that well?
Right.
You might as well just pack up the stuff and head home, because that was insane.
And the one thing that I keep drawing back to is, if this is what Wisconsin's going to look like, if this is them heating up at the right time, they could be a dangerous team come next week and going forward in the NCAA. Some people forget that the first time Purdue and Wisconsin played, it was a top six matchup. Yep. Wisconsin didn't accidentally get to number six in the country. They played darn well. Then they dropped, 8 of 11.
Yeah.
You know, and got them to the five seed. You know, they earned, and I'm putting that in air quotes, that five seed, because they went into a dumpster fire of a slide.
Yeah.
But I tell you, they're not going to shoot 80% from threes all the time.
Right.
But if they start heating up, they're going to be dangerous this weekend for anybody that plays them. And they're going to be dangerous next week when they get into the NCAA.
No, I think you're right. That was amazing. It was kind of hard to believe. You just kept staring at it. Like,
they ended Maryland's season, because Maryland sat at 500 and needed one more win to ensure that they had at least a 500 record. And Wisconsin went in and said, no, that's cute.
Nope.
And then just dumped on them like it was it was nothing.
That was insane. And then you had Ohio State beating Iowa 90-78, a game that both teams were pretty desperate for, because here's the crazy thing, Sam.
Ohio State can make the tournament.
They could make the tournament. I was talking like a week or so ago, like, look at this. What a run. Like, you can make the NIT. That's amazing given where Ohio State was. And they're like, well, we're still having conversations about the NCAA tournament. And I kind of sat there and thought about it, and I started looking at the resume. I'm like, they've got a goal of making the Big Dance. And with a 90-78 win over Iowa, what, Diebler's 6-1 since taking over?
If they beat Illinois, are they really in the conversation?
That's
like, seriously?
Question.
Like right now, they're a cute feel-good story. But if they beat Illinois tonight, is that a, oh my goodness, we really should think about putting Ohio State in?
I'm wanting to pull up the bracketology. So Joe Lunardi, when was this updated? This was as of in the wee hours of the morning. Joe Lunardi of ESPN has Ohio State as a next four out team as of now.
So you beat Illinois, a top 10 team for a big portion of the season. That might put them on the first teams or the last teams in, maybe?
How crazy would that be? And look, I don't know, because the dynamics of Ohio State, where you have Gene Smith retiring and you have an incoming athletic director and Ross Bjork from Texas A&M. I don't know if Ross Bjork wants to make his own imprint on the program, whatever.
Diebler's going to make it darn hard for him too if he does this.
And if, like, there's rumors out there about, you know, Dusty May possibly being linked to the Ohio State job. And I get that. Like, he was in the Final Four last year. It's hard to turn something like that down. But you really should circle back and take a couple closer looks at Jake Diebler, because this is incredible.
Well, and who is he? He's an Ohio State guy.
Yeah.
You know, and granted, it's not going to be all rainbows and unicorns going forward. But at this point right now, it is all rainbows and unicorns. And I tell you what, if they play Sunday, if Ohio State's playing Sunday, I don't know that there's any way you can keep them out of the NCAA, is there?
Yeah.
Because that means they're beating Illinois and then either IU or Nebraska.
Yep.
Those are two pretty decent wins. IU's playing pretty well, even though they didn't play great against Penn State last night. They're playing pretty well. I think they've won five, maybe six in a row to get to this point. And Nebraska is the number three seed in the tournament. So if Ohio State beats number two seed and then comes in and beats the three seed or IU, the six seed, and they play for the championship, I don't know how you can keep them out of the tournament then.
Yeah.
Even if they don't win it.
It's insane. And so now with the Iowa loss, because Iowa was on that bubble too. They're off the bubble.
They're going NIT in.
You brought up Indiana. I wonder how I've seen some of the discourse on social media of how upset and frustrated Indiana fans are by the fact that their resume, which it's pretty similar to Michigan State's, except for maybe strength of schedule.
Right.
They're not really even considered for the bubble in Michigan State. With the updated bracketology, is the first of the last four byes. So they'd be the first 10 seed, you could say, where they're not playing in Dayton. Mm-hmm.
Can I say something about that? Mm-hmm. If you're looking at records, okay, mm-hmm. granted, IU finished at the 6th seed, but I think they were the same record, weren't they, for the Big Ten, or were they one game different?
I believe the same.
Okay, and then their overall record is roughly the same. Mm-hmm. Then you have to fall back on strength of schedule, I think, don't you? I mean, you literally have to fall back. Which one was the tougher schedule to play and more acceptable to have that record rather than the one that had more of a cream puffy type of schedule and end up with the same record? Isn't that an accurate way?
No. I think you're right. And look, there's so many different ways to frame arguments to fit whatever narrative you have. And I think what frustrates them too is like you look at the quad one records, they're identical. You look at like if you go through, it's almost spit and image identical. And Indiana did have Kansas come to their place. They lost just a couple of bad non-conference home games, but I mean,
what is the marquee win for IU though? What's the marquee win for IU?
That's a good question.
Because Michigan State can hang their hat on bumping the living daylights out of Baylor.
Yeah.
And Baylor is a darn good program this year.
Yeah, you're right. So let's go ahead and pull up Indiana's schedule.
This is not me as a Purdue fan ragging on IU. This is legit who's their hang their hat on win of their schedule or of their season to where they can go toe to toe with Michigan State on this.
So let's rapidly run through the Hoosier schedule. They started with a home win against Florida Gulf Coast. They had a home win against Army. They had a home win against Wright State. They lost to UConn by 20. UConn's a tough team though. No shame there. They beat Louisville in New York. They beat Harvard in Indy. They beat Maryland at home. They beat Michigan at Michigan. They lost to Auburn by 30 down in Georgia. They lost to Kansas at home. They beat Morehead State by one, which that's going to hurt your metrics. They beat North Alabama. They beat Kennesaw State all at home. Then they get into Big Ten play. And in Big Ten play, lost to Nebraska, beat Ohio State, lost to Rutgers, beat Minnesota, lost to Purdue, lost to Wisconsin, lost to Illinois, beat Iowa, lost to Penn State, beat Ohio State, lost to Purdue, lost to Northwestern, lost to Nebraska, lost to Penn State, beat Wisconsin. But that's when Wisconsin was falling off. That's at the end of February. Beat Maryland, beat Minnesota, and beat MSU, and then beat Penn State last night in the Big Ten tournament.
Iowa is their marquee win.
I was going to say, or Wisconsin, even though they were falling off, I suppose.
Yeah, okay. Well, so you're telling me that IU is wanting to argue that their marquee win is the number 5 seed in the Big Ten,
yeah,
the fifth best team in the Big Ten, and Michigan State is Baylor.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but Michigan State's got the tip to me on that one, and it's not at all because what's on my chest and my head. It's
right.
What's in my head thinking if you took the names off and just showed me resumes, I'm taking Michigan State's.
And I'd be curious too, for the fans that are engaging in that discourse, the multiverse where Michigan State loses that game to Baylor, what MSU's resume looks like and where they're placed at, because I mean, without that win, you're kind of right. Like that's kind of what's spearheading them, and the win over Illinois. They did beat.
I was
going to
say they beat Illinois too.
Yeah.
So they've got two games that they could hang a hat on.
Yeah.
And Illinois might even be the better of the wins. But let's go out of conference. Yeah. If you go out of conference, IU doesn't have a marquee win. Because before we got into Big Ten play, it was Maryland. It was in those two that they played before the full season started. Maryland was the one that they hung their hat on.
If they could have beaten Kansas and held on there,
correct, I mean,
we're having a different discussion.
Even though Kansas has turned in kind of a one-off season to where it's not a normal season for them, you know, that would still be a marquee win, and it would be at least a comparable, because Baylor and Kansas are in the same conference.
Yeah. But no, I find that pretty fascinating when examining the resumes. And I understand the frustrations when you just see those numbers in front of you, but I find that to be pretty interesting.
And so IU fans, yes, I'm saying that Michigan State should get the nod, but you just heard my reasoning. It has nothing to do with the fact that I think it's hilarious and I want IU to be in the MIT. It has nothing to do with that.
Yeah. And then Indiana beat Penn State last night, 61-59. We briefly mentioned that. It comes down to a put-back game winner from Anthony Leal. And the Hoosiers live to see another day where they'll move on to today, as we have four more games of Big Ten men's basketball there. That game just didn't seem the prettiest, but somebody was going to have to win the rock fight, and Indiana prevailed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of how
Michigan State. Yeah, exactly. Michigan State gets rewarded with their win against Minnesota today. They get to tip off the day against Purdue.
So let's go ahead and move there. That's a noon tip in Minneapolis. It's Michigan State and Purdue. They met once during the regular season, and actually for as up and down of a year it's been for Michigan State,
it's a good game.
Michigan State played Purdue really well in that game at Mackey Arena. Purdue comes in right now as maybe the overall number one seed in the NCAA based on some of the bracketologist work.
I've seen most of the bracketology that I've seen, they have Purdue number one with Houston very close right behind.
Okay.
But that's not to say that hasn't changed. It's been a week or so since I've looked at it. So they may have Houston number one overall now on their newest prognostications, but it's 1 and 1A. I mean, they're literally, you could put one at the one seed at the one overall seed and the other one as the number two one seed, and you wouldn't be wrong either way, I don't think.
So you get Michigan State and Purdue at noon today. What are you looking for in that one, Sam?
Honestly, to me, this is Purdue's got a one seed wrapped up. I don't know that it matters to Purdue whether or not they're the number one overall seed.
Right.
I think they know that they're a one seed. They're probably going to stay close to home for the first two rounds of the tournament and go close to home. Excuse me. For the regionals and finals, if they get to that point and stay close to in Detroit. So I don't know if they maybe try to do some things. Maybe, okay, we're gonna give Zach Edey a little bit more rest to see what we can do without him in case we get into that scenario where he gets two quick fouls. I mean, mm-hmm. Michigan State saw that yesterday with Malik Hall being out for more than half of the first half, and they struggled. They had to have their guard play, keep them in that game. So maybe Matt Painter does a little bit of that. So I look to see how the supporting cast outside of Zach Edey performs without him on the court. Granted, he's going to get his 24 and 13. That's almost a given. And even if he doesn't, let's see how the supporting cast reacts. That's what I'm going to look for.
Well, and I'm pretty fascinated too, because in full transparency, I actually missed the game where they played at Mackey because I was at a Michigan State Wisconsin hockey game to wrap up the regular season.
Who won, by the way?
I believe that was that weekend, right? Who won? I believe it was that weekend. Michigan State won the first night, which got them the regular season championship. They lost the game I went to, which didn't really have any effect.
It was a celebration day.
I was there for the after.
It's like going to an MLB game. It's like going to an MLB game after the team has clinched their playoff spot. The next day, all the subs are in.
Everybody's in. Yeah, but no, it was pretty fun. But I'm pretty sure that was that night.
I believe you're right.
But so what I don't know that happened in the first game because I missed it. And if you saw this and you have the answer, share, Sam. But In years past, like last year, Michigan State would not double on Zach Edey in the post. And their theory was Edey can have 30, 35, and nobody else gets anything. We shut everybody else's water off, and we're right there. And last year, it took a buzzer beater from Zach Edey, not a buzzer beater, but a game winner in the final seconds, to beat Michigan State at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this year around, if they tweaked on that or if it's still one-on-one with Edey.
Full disclosure, I watched it on my phone, meaning the updates. So, it was a Saturday, and it was in the middle of the day. It was like at 4 o'clock, and I've got kids that do a bunch of stuff during the weekend.
So, I get it. So
unfortunately,
apologize.
I was relegated to watching it on my phone, and it wasn't full. Like, I wasn't watching the game. I was watching the updates. So
yeah.
I honestly don't know.
And I don't either. So I apologize to the listeners because I was consumed with other sports.
Me too.
But that's something, and listeners probably already have the info advantage on, but that's something I'm looking forward to today to see how they handle Edey. Mm-hmm. And if they go with that same theory of, hey, Edey, you can have 30. We'll play you one-on-one straight up. How does MSU's perimeter defense shut down the Lawyers, the Smiths, the Jones, everybody else surrounding on that Purdue team? Or does Edey just one-on-one able to beat up the Spartans? Is he able to draw enough fouls to where it makes everything a carousel there at the center spot? Like, that's the real intriguing part to me, is how MSU decides to guard Edey. Again, mm-hmm. a lot of our listeners probably already have that answer, but I don't, because I was watching Stick and Puck that night.
Well, and with years past, he, you know, the two, or last year, let's just go back to last year, he didn't do that with Edey. They didn't double him.
Yep.
You also didn't have a Braden Smith, who's an all Big Ten, and a Fletcher Lawyer, who is an honorable mention. And then you didn't have a Mason. Well, you had Mason Gillis, but he was a starter.
You didn't literally have Lance Jones.
Correct. So there are different components to this Purdue team that didn't exist last year.
Agreed.
They were there maybe, but they didn't exist at the level in which they do this year. And the fact that it now is the case, will Tom Izzo decide, you know what, this is something that we're going to have to, you know, we need this win to maybe solidify and really make sure that we're in, or get a better seating. I know Tom Izzo doesn't give two hoots about seating, really don't, but he doesn't like feeling uncomfortable either. So, you know, he's going to want to try, or is he Tom Izzo and this is what we've done in the past and this is what we're going to continue to do?
Which, that's what sticks out to me, is will probably be the thing, because that's just how Tom Izzo and MSU have ran for 29 years. But one thing that I find pretty interesting, I mean, for the most part, Michigan State, I mean, we talk about some of the center challenges that they've had and trying to figure out the best way to navigate those waters. We talked about, for Michigan State, their best chance of scoring is when they get out and run. And they had 19 mm-hmm. fast break points against Minnesota yesterday. They got to get out and run against Purdue. But if you don't get the rebound, and rebounding has been a difficulty for Michigan State this year, which is kind of hard to believe to ever say about a Tom Izzo team, mm-hmm. but the Bigs have not rebounded to the same level or standard that has been there before for Michigan State. And so, you know, you have to spend extra attention on the glass to help out the Bigs, especially going against Zach Edey. I think that's going to stifle some of you trying to get out and run. So how Michigan State balances, hey, make sure Zach Edey's not getting 30 second chance points and trying to get out and run, that's going to be an interesting dance, I think, as well today. Because if Michigan State has any chance, it's getting out and running, but
right.
you can't do it without the rebound.
And my question is, will they put a smaller big in to try to pull Edey away from the hoop? You know
if
what
Xavier
I mean?
Booker goes there, yeah. a lot of people had that thought originally, because he's 6'11", he plays from the perimeter.
Yeah.
And if you get him out, then you can at least drive. I mean, Michigan State shoots the three ball pretty well, but they don't shoot many of them. I mean, example yesterday, they took 54 shots as a team. Only 8 of them were from three. They hit 5 of those 8 threes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a team that hits the three ball pretty well, but they just don't take many. So they like to drive. And if Edey's there in front of the rim, I mean, there's not many driving lanes available to you.
Well, and there are, you know,
there are forces, you know, deterring forces, and then there are deterring forces. Yeah. And Zach Edey just standing in front of the hoop, you don't want to go there because, you know what, you've got to go up and over him or around him, and he's such a big guy in there, and he's got such a stretch. You've got to go a long ways to get around him. And I just, if you can pull him away from the hoop, and I guess that's different than transition, but at least if you're pulling him away from the hoop, you're giving yourself the chance to have that mini fast break of driving to the hoop, you know,
there's because just that's, lanes. It's not so congested.
Like, right. Right. And so like, if that might be their chance, because on the offense or on the defensive side, you can't control where Zach Edey is.
Yep.
Going after the rebound, the offensive rebound. So it's more difficult to get those defensive boards. Now, granted, don't get me wrong, he's not everywhere, so they're going to be able to rebound.
Yep.
But like, does that, you know, maybe, okay, we can't necessarily force the fast break on our defensive end to the offensive transition, but let's pull Edey away from the hoop and have that little mini break where we can have our guards shooting to the hoop.
So that's one of the schools of thoughts, like if you get Booker in there. But the other part of it, too, is Booker still has to develop a little bit with his rebounding skill and his defensive skill. And the concern is Edey can
eat him alive
a little bit inside. So it'll be interesting to see what the staff decides to do. But I think that's the whole thing is if Michigan
State, Dalton, Zach Edey's just tall.
Right. but if Michigan State is going to be in this game, it's going to be because they're going to have some success on the break. Yeah. And that's going to be a difficult dance, but I'm kind of excited to see what MSU does there. And by the way, too, you brought up Zach Edey on the defensive side and pulling him away from the basket. Look, I understand why he didn't win this award, but I could seriously listen to the argument and understand the case of Zach Edey being defensive player of the year. And it's not based on stats. It's just based on, look how we're talking about Michigan State having to play Purdue for today's example. Mm-hmm. It changes everything because he's so big, long, and he can move around that cylinder. It changes how you attack the defense.
Well, and yeah, your game plan offensively is changed completely when you know that you've got 7-4. There is a reason why when he goes on the floor or off onto the bench that teams hit the basket.
They go.
They attack the basket because all of a sudden that deterrent is gone. Now, don't get me wrong. Kaufman Wren. Yeah.
Yeah. Trey Kaufman Wren.
Yeah. I was thinking it was Wren Kaufman, but it's Kaufman Wren. He is defensively. He's not horrid.
Right.
But he's not 7-4, and he's not the physical presence that Zach Edey is. So I agree that you could at least give it some forethought because coaches have to prepare for him on the defensive end in a way that they don't have to prep for anybody else.
It changes the game. It changes the game when he's in there on defense. But let's go ahead and shift to the second game of today. Wisconsin and Northwestern, that one's going to be tipping off at approximately about 2:30. We talked about Wisconsin, how well they shot yesterday.
Right.
Now they go against Northwestern, who isn't fully healthy, I don't believe. I mean, we know Ty Berry's out for the year. Nicholson's been banged up down the stretch. Mm-hmm. But any chance to watch Boo Booey play basketball is a good day as a spectator. So that's going to be a fun matchup.
Honestly, if I'm picking as a fan, I want to see Wisconsin because I do not want to see Northwestern come into a game against Purdue.
Who thought years ago that everybody would be scared of seeing Northwestern?
yeah, and that's a credit to Chris Collins too, because he's turned the program into not the laughing stock that they've been for years.
Yep.
But if I tell you what, if Wisconsin's half of what they were yesterday, I don't want to see them either. If I'm a Purdue fan, you know, and that's taking for granted that I assume as a Purdue fan, Purdue's beating Michigan State. That's not a foregone conclusion either. But let's say Purdue went as a fan. I don't want to see either one of those teams if Wisconsin's playing like they did yesterday or Northwestern, period.
Yeah. That's kind of the situation on the women's side. You got into, for Michigan State, you're sitting there and you're like, Okay, if you get by Nebraska, you're expecting Ohio State, and then Maryland thumps them by 20, and you're like, oh, this Maryland team's playing pretty well, too.
Yeah, right.
And then, of course, Nebraska ends up beating Michigan State anyway and going to the tournament championship and was a shot away from beating Caitlin Clark and winning the tournament. That was that was exciting. Maybe we'll dive into that in a little bit.
Yeah.
But Ohio State, Illinois, they tip at 6:30. We've been talking about Jake Diebler and the job he's done already. 6-1 as the interim head man there for the Scarlet and Gray. Now they take on a tough Illinois team. But if Ohio State wins this one, you can start to have some chatter about Ohio State and put the Buckeyes maybe on that bubble.
Well, and you said they're like bubble adjacent right now.
Yeah, they're second four out. So they're four out that missed.
So they've got to jump at least five teams to get in.
Yep.
Okay, but I think a win against Illinois, that does a lot for them. And depending on what those teams above them do in their tournament, you know, if they stumble, that all of a sudden catapults Ohio State. I think, honestly, I would almost argue for Ohio State to be in if they beat Illinois today, just for the fact that they look at what they've done since Holtman's been dismissed.
Yep.
They weren't doing a thing. They're playing they'd be 7-1. So they're playing over 750 basketball with Diebler, and they've beaten Purdue. And if they beat Illinois, they've beaten the top two teams in the conference since that's happened. And they're not the dumpster fire that they were showing that they were necessarily. There was just something that wasn't working with Holtman and those players that now, be it the adrenaline rush of a new coach or the emotion, whatever, something's clicking, and they're doing things right now.
And you kind of framed and couched it right where I don't think the problem necessarily was Chris Holtman. Like, I'm kind of surprised it didn't work there in Columbus with Chris Holtman. I think Chris is a good coach. Mm-hmm. And so that one was a bit of a mystery still, not that they fired him, but just that it didn't work.
Right.
And now Chris Holtman signs a 6-year contract with DePaul where he's going to be taking over the Blue Demons. That's interesting.
I tell you what, if he turns that around, that will tell you that there was just something not right in Columbus that didn't flow right.
Yeah.
Not that he's a bad coach, not that the players, revolted. There was just something that didn't match right, because DePaul, I can remember DePaul making tournaments and being highly seeded in tournaments growing up. They are the dregs of the Big East right now. Like, they are the dregs. They're not a good program right now. And if he can turn them around to at least respectability, that will say a lot about Chris Holtman as well.
Yeah, that should be pretty interesting. And then the nightcap, 9:00 tonight, you have Indiana and Nebraska. So you get a Boo Booey earlier in the day. Now you get K-State Tominaga.
As a nice nightcap.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Bed.
I'll be at a baseball diamond. By the time I come home, I can stroll in and watch Tominaga do his thing. And for the Hoosiers, they're fighting still for postseason life. I mean, look, if the season ends now, they're an NIT team, but
yeah.
They still have the belief that they could be an NCAA tournament team. And a win today goes a little bit further. And then again, you get the winner if you win today of Ohio State, Illinois. It's possible.
Yeah. Well, and I think honestly, for them to have serious consideration, they've got to get to at least Sunday, if not win Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now, win Sunday, it's a moot point.
I was going to say, just in case any of the listeners aren't aware, if you win the tournament, you're in.
Like, you're right.
If anybody's maybe kind of new to college basketball, you win your conference tournament, you automatically qualify. The rest is just at-large bids for the surrounding best teams.
I think they have to at least get to Sunday to be considered.
Yeah.
Because you still only have Wisconsin as the win to hang your season on.
Yeah.
And that to me is not convincing enough to give you an at-large bid. It just isn't. And that's not taking anything. And I know I just said Wisconsin, they're starting to turn around to where if they're that good, they could make a run in the tournament. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's your one game that you can hang your hat on. After that, it's Maryland, who just got eliminated from postseason tournament stuff because they have a losing record yesterday.
Besides Michigan State being a surprising team this year based on where we were in the preseason and where we ended up, Maryland's another one that I kind of scratched my head about. I really thought the Terps were
surprising destined. The other way.
Yeah, I thought they could have been a top five team this year in the Big Ten.
We thought they were going to be competing with Illinois for number three.
Yeah, that's like, what I mean. I really thought.
The whole year we were saying, or the whole running up to the season, we thought Purdue, Michigan State, 1 and 1A. We don't know which way, but we think those are the top two teams. Then the next two are Illinois and Maryland.
Yep.
Well, we were right about one of them. On both cases, on both cases,
having double buys.
If anybody said, if anybody bet in Vegas that the top four seeds of the Big Ten were going to be Purdue, Illinois, Nebraska, and Northwestern, I need to get some financial advice from you because I need to make some bets with you because that is. Nobody could have seen that. We even thought maybe Nebraska could be decent to where they were top five.
Yeah.
We didn't, or maybe, and we thought that was maybe stretching it a little bit.
Yeah. No, it was a pretty big shock. But let's, well, we got a little bit of time here. Let's go ahead and move to the Big Ten Awards.
Yes.
For men's basketball this season. Player of the year is Zach Edey. He goes back to back. This isn't really a surprise. I don't even think we really need to talk about it.
He's
too
just
much.
Tall.
Yeah. Just tall.
Zach He's Edey just back- tall. He fouls on every possession and he always commits a 3-second violation. This is, and let me explain this to people that still have that 3-second violation thing. He is always in there. Men's NCAA basketball rule for 3-second is completely different from all high school, women's college and NBA 3-second rule. You only have to have 1 foot out and the other one needs to lift above. So Zach Edey, when he gets out, he lifts that foot up once, he resets his 3 seconds. Every time there's a shot, it resets the 3 seconds until there's possession. So yes, he spends a lot of time offensively in that lane, but he knows how to manipulate the rule. He gets 1 foot out and lifts the foot that's in the lane, and he resets his 3 seconds. Okay, I've watched extensively because I thought, am I arguing this wrong? And I sat there and looked and looked and looked, and I even found a thing that showed the comparisons of the different levels and the different gender levels and stuff. And men's NCAA is the only one that allows you to state in the lane with 1 foot and you just have to pick it up and out up. And even if it hovers, it's out of the lane.
So next time you're at a watching party for Purdue basketball and somebody shouts at it, you can drop and say, "Hey, Sam Sprunger, Big Talk told me."
That's right.
Big Ten defensive player of the year. I thought they had this one right. Ace Baldwin Jr. of Penn State.
Fantastic.
The way he's played this year, I thought it was incredibly impressive. He was so ferocious, feisty on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. I think they got that one right.
I believe so, too.
Co-freshman of the year. This is all the coaches voting, by the way. Owen Freeman from Iowa and Mackenzie Mbako out of Indiana. I thought that was pretty fair as well.
I have no argument.
He was in the conversation, too, but I think they got it pretty right there.
Yep.
Sixth man of the year, Mason Gillis out of Purdue. Maybe you could throw a couple others in the bunch, but I just thought overall, and this isn't tearing down Mason by any means, I just thought the sixth man of the year conversation wasn't as strong as maybe years past on the men's side. So I don't think they necessarily got it wrong. I just don't think it's as big of as significant of a thing as it's been before.
And with Mason Gillis, the one thing that the argument I would have that he absolutely was the sixth man, he was a starter all last year.
Yeah.
Every game last year. He also holds the Mackey Arena record for most three-pointers in a game with 9. Like, this guy is not – he would start on probably 10 of the other 13 Big Ten teams,
yeah,
if not all other 13. You know, I mean, this guy is a fantastic player. So for him to get the sixth man, I would say that's a right – choice, but I don't disagree with you either that it was kind of not a, I don't know, there just wasn't anything that stood out other than he was a starter and he does really, really well, you know, yeah, when he is in there.
Yeah. Which, and you're right. I mean, he's talented enough to be a starter, and so it all kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Co-coaches of the year. I thought this was interesting that it ended up being co-coaches, but Matt Painter of Purdue is one of the recipients. And we talked about this for weeks leading up to this, Sam. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he was ever not deserving. I just didn't think, based on the pattern that's existed for a long time, that if you have the preseason favorite and you win the title, that you get rewarded for it with the Coach of the Year award. Like, that's just never really been how the formula's worked, at least in recent years that I can remember. It's always been who came in with the worst expectations and achieved the most. Like, that's been the formula, which is kind of how Fred Hoiberg ends up sharing Coach of the Year. And again, I don't disagree with that. And for Matt Painter to get it, I tip my cap, because I think it shows a change of pattern in voters, which isn't the worst thing.
Well, I tell you, if they would have went 15-5, I don't know that it would have been co-coaches.
Yeah. There.
I think, honestly, the fact that they went 17-3 in the conference and only lost three games, one to Fred Hoiberg's Huskers, and then Ohio State on that high of, or in that emotional, you know, roller coaster of, we just got rid of our coach at in Columbus, and then at Northwestern. Like, they didn't lose a game that they should have won, unless you look at Ohio State maybe being one of those that, yeah, they were the dregs at the time. But there are extenuating circumstances, and I just thought maybe since he was exceeding what the expectations were, even though it was just a little bit more than what people were expecting, you know, it, I thought maybe he could be. I didn't expect him to share.
Yeah.
I honestly, if they were giving it to somebody other than Matt Painter, I didn't think it would be Co. I just thought, okay, Hoiberg would get it over him. And, but I'm really surprised, honestly. And this is, I'm shocked Ben Johnson wasn't more in on this. I didn't see the voting. I would hope that he was top five.
Yeah. And I would imagine that he would finish top five, but, and here's the crazy thing, and this is why all this is so semantics and weird how we do the math on everything. If Minnesota wins, one or two more Big Ten games, they finish top six in the Big Ten conference, so almost top five. And that probably does it, but because they lost those couple towards the end of the year, and he's 9-11 with a squad that we all thought might have three Big Ten wins before the year, then all of a sudden we don't give him that award.
Yeah, the fact that if he would have won the last game of the season, and, you know, maybe that sways it just enough. You know, if he finishes 10-10, was that enough? You
he
know,
been tied for six, right? Yeah, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's possible that we're looking, if they win that last game of the season, we're looking at a different outcome of Coach of the Year. But, you know, with what I don't think the voters got it wrong, though.
Agreed.
with their coaches of the year.
Yep.
Be it and I even tweeted this yesterday, or whatever, X'd it, whatever it's called, you know, as happy as I am that Matt Painter was recognized for the job that he did, I am shocked that Ben Johnson, what he did this year was amazing. And the fact that they're not done playing basketball, even though they're eliminated from the Big Ten tournament, is a big testament to what he's done.
Yeah, it doesn't take anything away from the incredible. No. The Howard Moore Assistant Coach of the Year went to Brandon Brantley of Purdue. I thought this was pretty fitting because Brandon's domain is with the post players, the bigs. And look, Purdue's had some pretty good bigs in recent years, despite just this year. Besides just this year.
I was looking at the Matt Painter tenure, starting with A.J. Hammonds. They have had a 7-footer or taller since like 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And not just a 7-footer, a 7-footer who contributes.
You got A.J. Hammonds in there. You got Isaac Haas. You have
Harms
after that, and then Edie. And mixed in there, besides the 7-foot, you had two really good bigs in Swanigan and Travion Williams.
Yes.
Like, the work they've had in the post, that's what I brought it up recently in a conversation with Rafael Davis. And I think I didn't quite say my point as clearly as I was trying to get it across. Because I said, you know, Matt Painter's got this formula of having a dominant post and surrounding shooters around it. And he focused on the point that Well, Zach Edey wasn't dominant coming out of high school. And that wasn't necessarily my point, because right. he did back up Armando Bacot at IMG College or IMG Academy. Like, Rayfield's mm-hmm. absolutely right there. They developed Zach Edey. But my point is, offensively, it is, hey, we got a really good big and you've got to pay attention to him. And then we got shooters on the outside that are going to hurt you. It seems like a really stripped down, pretty sensical version of playing basketball. And it's worked really well for Purdue.
The thing I keep going back to is Zach Edey hasn't played basketball for very long. I have my youngest is older than his playing career, like that. And he's he's going to be the 2-time national champion or national player of the year from the Naismith player of the year. He's going to be. I don't know how you can not give it to him after he has improved on a season that he won the award. He improved statistically on that season. So I think it's the Naismith is a foregone conclusion. He's going to be. But, you know, my point is what in the world could he have been if he would have started at such a young age to where it just blows my mind.
Yeah, no, it's crazy to think about. It's worked out pretty well for him. So
sure.
Let's go ahead real quick, because I know we're starting to move a little bit short on time. Let's talk about the All Big Ten honors by team. The coaches voted first team: Marcus Damask out of Illinois, Terrence Shannon Jr. out of Illinois, Boo Booey from Northwestern, Zach Edey, and Braden Smith, both from Purdue. Meanwhile, the media, scrolling down, the media went with Terrence Shannon Jr., Boo Booey, Zach Edey, Braden Smith, and Jameer Young. So Jameer Young and Marcus Damask were the two differentiators between the coaches and media.
Both of those are adequate and appropriate to me. Damask, for what, you know, whatever your thoughts are, Terrence Shannon Jr. issue earlier, Damask stepped in and kept Illinois where they are. They could have easily just folded it in and ended up the sixth seed when Jr. came back, and they, you know, we'd be talking about them like we are potentially with Wisconsin. No, Damask came in and he took over. And the fact that him and Lance Jones were on the same team at one point, how are we not talking about Southern Illinois making a Sweet 16 run in the past few years, you know? Because him, for those that don't know, Damask and Lance Jones from Purdue were on the same team last year.
Yep.
And they have both, they're both amazing. And to me, Jones is the difference for Purdue. Like, that, he's just that difference. He's the one that can step in and make things happen and really create his own shot or be defensive or whatever when Lawyer or Smith are not in the game. But Damask can score on at will.
Yeah, and for Lance Jones, I labeled it, he's a game breaker. Like, he's got a dynamic, a different gear that the team doesn't have. Yep. And when their backs are against the wall, maybe with a certain backcourt pressure or whatever, Lance Jones able just to break the game and tilt it in their face.
He can break anybody's ankles. Yeah. Like, I've seen it. Like, he'll be running full fledge and all of a sudden boop boop and just change just a real little bit, and all of a sudden the guy's laying on the floor because he's felt silly and just couldn't cover it. You know, it, and you're right. He is, you're right. But
all right,
I think they nailed the All Big Ten right.
Yeah, I didn't have many complaints. I'll rip through the second and third teams real quick.
Sure.
Second team for coaches: Tony Perkins, Jameer Young, Tyson Walker, Keisei Tominaga, and AJ Storr. Second team from the media: Marcus Damask, Khalil Ware, Tyson Walker, Dawson Garcia, and AJ Storr. So that's how the second team ended up. Third team, this is by the media: Coleman Hawkins, Peyton Sanford, Keisei Tominaga, Bruce Thornton, and Ace Baldwin Jr. Meanwhile, from the coaches, their third team was Khalil Ware, Peyton Sanford, Dawson Garcia, Rink Mast, Brooks Barnheiser, and Ace Baldwin Jr. So that's how the voting wrapped up for the Big Ten teams.
I can't argue with any of those. And here's if there were no glaring omissions from the first team, I personally don't ever see any glaring omissions from the rest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if they've nailed the most important one, I'm not going to argue the semantics of the second and third team. You know, I mean, now in the world of NIL, maybe there is some money that goes into that, but you're not supposed to have performance-based stuff. So, but we all know that they play by the, everybody plays by the rules.
Okay, so we got just a couple minutes left. Let's go take fan interest out of this. We'll go real quick here.
Okay.
Game you're most excited for today with the Big Ten men's basketball tournament.
Oh, goodness. It's Wisconsin Northwestern. It really is.
Okay.
Because Northwest, I've been waiting for Northwestern to fall off, and they just haven't yet. Now, don't get me wrong. Maybe they're not as dominant, and I use that word kind of loosely, but dominant as they were with Tiberi, but they haven't fallen off the face of the planet like I thought they could have. They have recovered and have maintained very well. And Wisconsin being that lost 8 of 11, now all of a sudden shot 80% from the three-point run. Like, are they turning things around? So I'm anxious and interested to see how this game comes out, because which team folds, which team isn't quite right, you know?
And I'm with you. I think that's going to be a great game. If we look at the spreads based on ESPN, that's the closest game predicted between Wisconsin and Northwestern. But I'm going to pivot to the game after that. Ohio State and Illinois.
That was my second one.
30. That's got the highest over-under total. That total is 152.5. So they're predicting each team with 76 points in that ballpark. Should be up and down. Ohio State played pretty inspired last night when they got their win. I think Ohio State has a pretty clear cut goal in front of it that they understand they could get to the NCAA tournament. How they battle with a great Illinois team, I'm most excited to see that matchup and what happens with that inspired Buckeye group. But
as that's number two on my list.
So we're pretty close. We're just flip flopping a little bit. But we'll go ahead and close out the show for this week for Big Talk. Sam, on the way out, let everybody know where they can find us.
Yeah, on the TikToks, the Instagrams, and the platform formerly known as Twitter, we are at B1G_talk. Dalton, that's B1G, not B-I-G, B1G underscore talk. Yep, hold the finger up always. We are number one. There, how about that? We are number one. Put the one in there. Big Talk, Facebook, it's the same thing. B1G talk, Big Talk, not all Big Talk though, Dalton, because those are not us. Those, yes, no big, no all, just big. We're big. Yes. But you can find our stream every week on the all ASAP network, the All Sports All Plays network every week at 9 a.m. And then later that day on the Lounge Media Group or through Lounge Media Group. If you want to see the stream that you missed, maybe go to Spotify. That's where it will reside.
All right. So a big thank you to all of you again for tuning in and joining us for another edition of Big Talk. Hopefully everybody has a great Big Ten basketball tournament.
Enjoy weekend. Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Have fun with it. Santa's coming right around the corner.
That's right.
We're getting ready for the big dance.
That's right. Selection week. Sunday's right around the that's kind of Santa delivering. And then that next week is just everybody opening their gifts.
And enjoying it.
Yeah. And enjoying
it's the best time of the year. So hopefully everybody enjoys the Big Ten tournament. For my partner Sam Sprunger, I'm Dalton Shetler. Take care, everybody.
See ya.